Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes, burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips, hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning, getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Have me, your co-host, Fabler, leading the way. So welcome and joining us. So the theme for tonight is a quote that Ephesiana picked out. We called the contest Eggshells. So the quote was by Stephanie Bennett Henry, and it goes, "Those eggshells you walk on to keep the peace only get louder. The more you walk on them in the first place. Sweep them up, pour them in the middle of the room, and refuse to ever bend to someone else's breaking ever again, even your own. You're bigger than the trauma that you learned to walk around. For fear you may wake a monster you know well. Walk straight through it, babe. It is the only way." So that is the first theme of the night. And Pam, are you with me?
You know I am. Hello, hello. How's it going?
Hello, hello. So it's going all right.
All right. It's going to be an awesome show. The first of all, the topic I think is one that so many people can relate to. and it looks like you got a lot of great, you got a lot of great poems. And I, of course, as always, looking forward to delving into them and reading and commenting. Now, are you planning on posting your own links, or would you like me to do that for you? Okay.
I can do it. I can go ahead and drop the links on the board if that works for you.
Absolutely.
So for our first one that we have up, grab it. That is on the board now. It is called One Size Fits All by Teodora Anderson. So I'll go ahead and give this one a read. There was no walking around, under or over it, this game of Monopoly, which kept sending me back to jail, like a nightmarish Groundhog Day movie that I could not awaken or escape. I watched the sheep put up a struggle while she was being slaughtered. What a waste of energy when the end is all the same. I walked amongst the dead with smoke rising up into the air. There was no vultures to erase the death, which stench lingering on for decades. And as I waited behind the red traffic light, I caught myself falling asleep. This life was eroding me from inside. As I counted the days, not by the setting of the sun, but by the number of sufferings growing larger around my heart. And when the ring of fire grew cooler, I thought I could ignore it all, but my body screamed in pain, asking me to acknowledge that some hells are one size fits for all. End poem. So I really liked this write. You know, there's such a pain to it and such a clever use of words that I really enjoyed in this, especially the use of sufferings that's hyphenated there, and then again the use of the word rings later. Just the idea of taking the word suffering and piecing it apart into two separate words to give the image of, like, the bands digging into a heart, being representative of pain. And then just this trying to free yourself of a struggle that there's just no avoiding, that you're just in it, you know. I watched the sheep put up a struggle while she was being slaughtered. What a waste of energy when the end is all the same. But it's such a bleak and yet angry statement, you know, to watch an animal be slaughtered and then, like, begrudge them, like, to have, like, rancor because they bothered to struggle. You know, what does that say about the pain in your own life that it's, you don't even understand why it's worth a fight anymore? So I found this, you know, biting and angry in regards to, like, a trauma of some sort or some kind of, you know, pain. It is left pretty open-ended on what kind of pain it is, you know, perhaps addiction, perhaps, you know, it can be just about any kind of traumatic life event that you just keep reliving over and over again. So I really enjoyed the emotionality of this, along with the, that really kind of drove home each image wrapped within. So I thought it was a fantastic write. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. I like that you went with the metaphor at the beginning of the game of Monopoly, where you just keep getting sent back to jail. Really clever phrasing. The slaughtering, of course, of the sheep, it made me think of Silence of the Lambs, And but the other thing it made me think of, and I think that was also because sleep was mentioned, you know, like falling asleep at the traffic light, it made me think of counting sheep and the whole idea that maybe the sheep dying is a metaphor for not being able to fall asleep. And I think that the interesting thing about that is, to me, it shows how when we are dealing with the stress of walking on eggshells or any kind of stress, it's like, as you mentioned, the stress of a past trauma, it affects our ability to fall asleep, and or sometimes we just end up falling asleep like all of a sudden when we don't expect to, because that your body physically reacts to stress. I really enjoy the fact that she did go so dark and visceral with her imagery, and that there is that whole idea of the play, well, the great play of words with that, but by the number of sufferings growing larger around my heart, and when the ring of fire grew colder, I thought I could ignore it all, but my body screamed in pain. It's just, it's so both interesting and horrifying how something emotional can cause the onslaught of a physical reaction. I just think this is a powerful and emotive write and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. I like that point that you bring up. You know, I didn't really think about it until I heard you say it, where, you know, the rings grew cold and her body still screamed out in pain. It makes me think of, you know, they say time heals all wounds, but this is a particular type of pain where it seems like that is not the case. You know, maybe it's not as raw or iron hot, but, you know, a cold, hard band around your chest is not, I wouldn't call that healed.
Exactly.
I'm glad you drew attention to that line. Good one. So the next piece I've put up on the board is called Eggshells by Lynn Gauthier. Did you want to read that one, Pam?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And this is Eggshells by Lynn Gauthier. And let me check something. Didn't you have? Well, shoot. Okay. Hold on. I'm checking something. Okay. Lynn has a SoundCloud. I'm going to send out a message. And if you could put up one that doesn't have a SoundCloud and read it again, but read for a second time in a row,
yeah.
I'll message, like, say, MK or Phil. And
not a problem.
See if we can get something.
All right. So then I'm going to go ahead and go to Quest by Daniel Deschino. Quest, wandering, a monk made of flickering light, trapped in a cage of flesh, searching for emptiness with the hope of universal truth. A night on a quest, one in an endless series of long forgotten nights. But what of the quest? Cruel is the fate of the curious who race toward the end and forget the journey. How can a quester know the direction if they do not know what they seek? How can the thinking mind solve a puzzle when the pieces are hidden by thought? The clear mind holds the key to open the doors of enlightenment, yet I cannot see the message written by the stars obscured by the clouds. I cannot see the colors of the horizon when the fog from an ocean breeze overtakes, and I cannot hear the calming rhythm of a train in the distance when the rain washes it away. Time has punished me with a mind of memories, and left clarity but a dream, lost in a thought, thousand painful dreams. And I have seen too much pain not to feel, and I have heard the splash of too many fallen tears not to have the cries of the saddened echo endlessly in the soundtrack of those dreams. But clarity must exist, as obscured would not be a word if there was not something beyond. The quest continues. The quest is always moving forward. It is the quester that stops. I will keep moving. I will take the next step. How can I not? End poem. I really liked this piece a lot. And actually, while I was reading this piece, it inspired the theme for my next contest, which is about Lao Tzu and Taoism. Because I felt like this just had so many Taoist principles in it. You know, the idea that the universal truth is to not act, and that in acting we muddy the waters of balance, which I found really fascinating. You know, there's just so many principles in here that mimic that idea to me. The idea that, people give up and people stop, but that march to the end of the quest does not, and the quest has been going on the whole time. I also enjoy the kind of, like, sad, melancholic, like, contemplation of the suffering of others that's in here. You know, the time has punished me with a mind of memories and left clarity but a dream lost in a thousand painful dreams. You know, the loss, the learning from suffering, your own suffering, but also to appreciate the suffering of others and to learn from that as well. You know, some people have to learn the hard way, and other people can learn from other people. And I think it saves a lot of personal suffering in that way, but you'll never escape all of it. And if you're a really empathetic person, even the suffering of others will affect you very deeply. The imagery in this is gorgeous. Just the idea of a rain of tears and the clarity and the echoing sadness, just the phrasing used to me is, it's very peaceful. Like I could almost hear the pattering of the tear rain. I really enjoyed this piece. I just felt like it was very contemplative, almost like a meditative piece in some ways. And then that last stanza, that I will keep moving. I will take the next step. How can I not, you know, to just be pushed to action. And then maybe at some point you too, your story will end and the quest will continue beyond you. And I love how that's implied and said without being said by pulling back to the front another night on this continuing quest. And of course we know how the quests of nights end. So I just really enjoyed this. I thought there was a great continuity to it and just some really great messaging about a type of outlook on life. So I thought it was a beautiful piece. What did you think, Pam?
Well, first of all, that was a wonderful comment. I like how you focused, like you mentioned, how it had kind of a contemplative feel to it. And it's what's first of all intriguing to me is the picture she chose to use with it has almost a comical effect to it because of the cartoonishness. And yet, really, there's not a comical effect to the poem. In fact, I suspect most of the poems will be for this show. Oops, I'm on the wrong poem. I forgot. Oh, my goodness, that was such a brain fart moment. Okay, let me try this again. Okay, sorry.
I'm like, I'm not sure which picture. I'm like looking. I'm like, where's the picture?
I didn't move away from Lynn's poem. Okay, so let me try this again with Daniel's poem. Yes, and you're right. That makes more sense. The contemplative makes sense about this puzzle. I like, you know, the thing I find interesting about this one is it's not just venting. Because, you know, and that is one of the great things about poetry is when you've been through difficult relationships or abusive relationships, or you've been in time periods of your life where you walked on eggshells, you know, you're allowed to use poetry for venting, for a release of inner pain. But here we almost have someone who focuses on finding an answer to help them get through that. The clear mind holds the key holds the key to open the doors of enlightenment. Yet I cannot see the message written by the stars when obscured by clouds. I think those are just some wonderful tidbits of wisdom. And, you know, it's interesting how the last three lines are almost a poem in themselves, but clarity must exist. I don't know, there's almost, it's interesting, the last three lines, even though they're not rhyming, there's something about them that almost comes across as like a meditative chant. I also like that he opens up with the wandering a monk made of flickering light trapped in a cage of flesh searching for emptiness, which is the hoop of universe truth, a knight on a quest. How interesting to think of yourself or to think of anybody who is looking for enlightenment as if it was a monk, a spiritual being resting inside of them that just needed to find that light, find that purpose. I just think this is a wonderful thought-provoking write and very well done.
Yeah, like I said, I really liked this piece. There's just so many tidbits of wisdom tucked in here. You know, cruel is the fate of the curious who race toward the end and forget the journey. You know, it's about getting there, not where you're going necessarily.
Absolutely. Now, just to let you know, all the ones that are supposed to have audios are marked audio. Faziana marked them. Now, I have messaged MK. I can't guarantee she'll get to them, but what we'll do is let's go for ones first that don't have audios.
All right. Let me make sure that the one I just grabbed meets that code. I think it does, but I just want to make sure. Yep, we're good. That on the board. All right. Take it away, Dan.
All right. Ooh, Constance, I like her and I like her poetry. She's such a nice person. All right. Surrounded by Constance L. Mitchell. And it goes like this. I am surrounded by a narcissistic beast. Each day I am surrounded by abuse, verbal and physical. It all means the same now. I tiptoe on eggshells trying to exist. No, don't make noise when doing the dishes. Don't run the washer or dryer. Too much noise. Please shush. Don't meow and wake him up. No noise is allowed. I walk on eggshells. Shh. Being quiet is survival. I can do this. I can walk on eggshells and live another day. Do I want to leave? Yes. Can I leave? No. I am in a place where I can't afford all my monthly bills, so I say, shh, he is waking up. Someday I will find escape. End poem. Oh, goodness.
Wonderful read, Pam. Yeah, this is just about being in that state of trapped by the eggshells, by the abuse, just enclosed in this space where you can't make noise for fear of waking the beast. I get the impression quite literally in this piece, but also just constrained constantly by the abuse. I found it particularly heart-wrenching, the section where it goes, do I want to leave? Yes. Can I leave? No. I'm in a place where I can't afford all my monthly bills, so I stay. And what a terrible reason, you know, to stay in a relationship, and yet is the case times in these situations of abuse. And a lot of times it's because, you know, abusers frequently isolate their victims so they don't have any other resources. They're just reliant on this other person. So I found that this piece was, you know, just really in the heart, like in the middle of the trauma, you know, hopefully nearing the end, since there's at least the realization that this is not a relationship worth being in if it weren't for unfortunate financial situations. You know, to even shush the cat to not wake this person who you know is just not going to treat you well, whether they scream at you or beat you, it says it's all the same now. You know, all of it hurts equally bad. So I really enjoyed this piece. I felt like it was a really strong emotional punch, you know, about just in the middle of this trauma, just the trappedness of it. It's like almost urgently quiet. So if you can scream about being quiet, that's how this piece feels to me. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really like how you mentioned that about it being in the middle of the trauma, because, you know, so many rites are about from the perspective of after having gotten through it, which is great. We need those kind of rites. But now with this rite, I'm not sure if it's true or fiction, but, I mean, it's obviously somebody's truth. You know, like sometimes people will write from a perspective, you know, and it's not necessarily something they're going to write in the moment. But I like that the poem focuses on the moment, on the being afraid. And, you know, me, for example, I've spent short periods of time after leaving my ex at shelters for women and children. And it's really difficult. But one of the things you learn is there's such a thing that as part of emotional abuse and control is the fact that they will make sure you have no financial freedom. They put themselves in control of the money. And so it is a really scary thing for women. Now, there is help out there, but it's just not really easy, and it is a scary process, because even though there are shelters out there and there are safe places for you if you need them, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to stand on my soapbox, but this is just something I feel it's important for women to know. You know, it's definitely understandable that it's not an easy step to take, because it's scary having to leave a life you know, even if that life you know is one of, like, abuse and degradation. But, yeah, I liked the first-person narrative. I liked that it focused in the fear of the moment and all the anxiety of having to keep everything and everyone around you quiet, including yourself. So it's a powerful write and very well done.
I agree. And, you know, I do think it is important to point out that those resources are there, even if they feel really far away. You know, I understand the anxiety of stepping out of a relationship, not quite knowing, you know, what now. You know, I was fortunate that when I was in the not so great relationship that I experienced, that I was the breadwinner. So, you know, it wasn't financially impactful for me, and that's incredibly fortunate. But, you know, I have certainly friends and people that I know who found themselves in those isolated situations, you know, just talking to them about it, you know, as they're comfortable talking about it is, you're afraid to make the move, like take that initiative to reach out to those resources, because if you get caught reaching out to the resources before you really have a plan in place, you know, you're kind of left high and dry, and you've just kind of, like, exposed your hand, you know, but that fear's got to
be
overcome. You know, that's how you get out. You have to play the hand, and it takes guts, you know, and sometimes it unfortunately takes time to get there. So just, you know, for most people at least, you know, you're not really alone. If you feel totally alone, there's somebody out there who cares. Thank you for bringing that up, Pam. All right.
Oh, absolutely.
Put the next one on the board. It is called Avoidance by Elise B. It goes like this. I went around you, my dear, jumped above your irrational fear, ducked under your faulty gear, skip-hopped to avoid each battle with you. But in the end, I still bled salty dewdrops, wounded with your unarticulated gunshots. I live with your unconvincing tale, sunken, rotten under impervious veil. Had I known you still had an arrow in your quiver, I would have declared victory as a quitter. But I now accept that I shouldn't have shivered so long, and you weren't the eggshell. You weren't the eggshell I was made to walk on. End poem. I enjoy how it acknowledges the emotions of, you know, a dissatisfactory, to say the least, relationship. You know, just not wanting to deal with the problems, you know, trying to avoid the battles, just trying to have a peaceful day, and it not working. You know, I still bled salty dewdrops, wounded with your unarticulated gunshots, you know. So even though the battle and the fight didn't happen, there are still wounds, you know, unarticulated gunshots. The idea that there was no sound, there was no gunshot, there was no argument, you know, but even just the lack thereof, just the anxiety and the elephant in the room and the problem that all parties are aware of but no one will acknowledge, you know, it's still wounding. There's still damage done for that, you know. And then the following stanza I find a lot more liberating. I lived with your unconvincing tale, sunken, rotten under an impervious veil. You know, I didn't buy it. Like, you know, jig is up. I just don't care anymore. And if I'd known that basically your actual fight was quite so weak sauce, I would have acted sooner, you know. And you weren't the eggshells. I was, you know, not even worth it. I almost picture, like, stomping them into powder or something. I enjoy the imagery. So I thought this piece was very well done. And just, there's something, you know, the acknowledgement of the ongoing pain followed by the liberation of coming out, of realizing that, oh, no, I'm better than this, you know. I thought that. See that Pan has stopped out for a moment. I will go ahead and move on to next piece. So, hold up. This piece is called Mask of Sun by Teodora Anderson. I'll go ahead and read this one as well. Bejeweled, Mask of Sun was laden with heavenly disapproval when it brought a sudden halt, despair of cries of war. But oh, the great plague, the burned without cause, what was this unexpected revenge on poor little us? As there will be no greater fire burning down the town, barely escaping the great tower that never lied in day or night. And when the sun gazed lazily at the stars, some died from the sickness that robbed them blind, even the ones with perfect sight. End poem. I really enjoyed this, just the idea of an eclipse, you know, this darkness, you know, here phrased as heavenly disapproval. Like, even the skies frowned upon, you know, this trauma, upon what was happening beneath, you know, and that there was a no longer any cries, you know, it brought a cries of war, and yet the pain went on, you know. It's the short lines, I think, are just very impactful, and that, you know, there's people not making it through, that there's this going on, and it takes even from people who can see exactly what's happening. So you can see it happening, you can acknowledge the war, you can acknowledge the violence, the trauma, and what's happening, but you can't stop it from happening. There's like an inevitability of the events of this piece. So I thought this was beautifully dark and kind of sad, devoid of hope almost. So I guess in the back of my mind, my brain wants to go to, well, at least, you know, an eclipse. So I guess I'm just endlessly optimistic in that regard. Pam, did you get a chance to see this now that I see that you're back?
I didn't, but I was looking through it, and I would like to take a little time to comment on avoidance and then also comment on Mask of Sun. I thought avoidance had kind of a nice, it had a nice flow to it. And what I particularly like about avoidance, and this is something that people don't, you know, because oftentimes we think of emotional and emotional abuse, we really think of those people who yell or call names, and that definitely that is. But there's also the silent treatment. You know, there's the whole, the wounded with your unarticulated gunshot. That whole idea of when somebody just will flat out refuse to communicate with you. And you start to avoid because you just, you don't want to deal with that. You know, I like the line, I would have declared victory as a quitter. It just, you know, sometimes the strongest victory you can get to is when you just decide to give up on something. And by giving up, I mean giving up the things and the people that are bad for you, that emotionally damage you. Mask of Sun, that, wow, that was some intense, dark imagery. What was this unexpected revenge on poor little us, as there will be no greater fire burning down a town, barely escaping the great tower that never lied in day or night? Oh, my goodness. You know, I think the whole idea of that burning tower, the idea of revenge, it's just, it's intense. That's what it is. When it brought sudden halt to despair, of cry of wars, and all the great plagues that burned without cause. And I like that you put in without cause, because it just seems so many times, well, actually the majority of times, that all the horrible violence that happens in this world happens when there isn't rhyme or reason. And just as I said, a powerful and intense write and very well done.
Yeah, no, I agree on both points. I really liked that you drew attention to the line, I would have declared victory as a quitter in Elise B's avoidance, just because so much in society, you know, we value never giving up. You know, how many times have you heard it? Don't give up. You can make it happen. You know, if you can dream it, you can do it. You know, sometimes giving up is the right thing to do. I mean, especially in an abusive relationship, but there are also so many other things, you know, gambling, you know, stop, you know, quitting is not always a bad thing. You know, an end of one thing isn't necessarily a loss, because it can be a start of something better, you know. That's how big career changes happen. That's how big shifts in life happen, is you usually have to stop something. And I would certainly say that it applies to abuse, you know. Yes, quitting can definitely be a win, you know. Kind of depends what the trophy is. So I'm glad you pointed out that line. I thought that was a strong line. And yeah, the dark imagery on Mask of the Sun, I thought it was just so stark. You know, I almost picture like the burning of Rome, just this like angry conflagration, you know, of abuse, just violence. Yeah, and most violence is, as you said, just really needless. You know, there's no reason, you know, what problem is so great that you need to kill people to solve it? So, excellent points, Pam. All right, so I'm going to put the next one up. It is called Keep on Walking on Eggshells by Dee Dunlop. Did you want to read this one, Pam?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I know you've been using your voice quite a bit, so, you know, if you need me to read a couple in a row, I am perfectly happy to do that. Keep on Walking on Eggshells by Dee Dunlap, and it goes like this. Earliest thoughts on awakening, because even Lucifer had to sleep. Last night's prayer, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my mind to keep. I pray I die before I wake. I pray the Lord his breath to take. First things first, stop breathing. Check the bed for wet spots. Soiling the bed with 2 to 3 hours, painfully kneeling on the broomstick, nice and dry. Okay, breathe. Keep on walking on eggshells. Peering liquidly into raging, dancing eyes of a mangy rabbit, pitbull gnarling, his canine dripping with sloppy drool, paralyzing screams of weariness, a sweat chilling horror that it could go for the throat and kill me, a sputtering, smoking, dipping airliner in an out-of-control nosedive. Would it hurt or would I just die? Before I felt anything, I clenched the armrest. I could feel my palms sweating. The world shrank to just my seat. Keep on walking on eggshells, face to face with a hawking young grizzly, high and rocky, gaping. He cautioned me, a monstrous head, large lavender shoulder hung. He clambered remissly up the hill towards me, caught my scent before he sighted me. Straight up on his two legs, screaming omnipotence, pawing at the empty mist with his huge claw, glistening beads of perspiration, tipped my hair follicles, making the goosebumps less noticeable, scraping squeaky sounds as he punctuously crept across the creaky pine kitchen floor, and not to avoid the popped rusty nail head, spider beast, I called him. Spider beast, because on that horrible first night laying on the dirt floor of the rotted woodshed, underneath him I lost myself in a 70s style of mindfulness, mesmerized by a white albino-looking spider feverishly spinning its arcane snare in a slitted oval hole of the woodshed door, sunlight brazing through, releasing elastic sticky droplets, catch its prey while Lucifer played with his prey. Both were ardorous males, one drawing sperm into pedipalps of milk, the other making large deposits in forbidden, innocent places. Keep on walking on eggshells, standing sickly-eyed at the water-stained kitchen sink, washing over easy egg stains off an old, dirty breakfast plate I hummed in my inside place. Stinking like stale urine and raw perspiration, he shadily snuck up behind me, breathing seductively from the sunburned nape of my exposed neck. His ribs, breastbone, erection pressed awkwardly into the undeveloped curves of my 12-year-old body, barely audible through his noisy, raspy attempts at breathing, were the all-too-familiar words, "See you tonight." Keep on walking on eggshells. End poem. Okay, well, that one should have came with a trigger warning.
Yeah, a trigger warning probably would have been called for. That was really, really dark and really intense. Thank you for the fantastic read, Pam. I don't want to go too much into the graphic details analyzing this piece. I mean, it is very violent. Very violative, you know, it's gross. Like, it makes me feel sick, and I mean that in a good way, because that means it's very effective, you know. Like, I feel like this strange mix of, like, extremely angry and, like, I might vomit, which is, you know, it's a very visceral. I will say that I did really enjoy the extreme description of this white albino-looking spider, just because it really evokes the thoughts of dissociation, you know, to running away. You know, when you're completely powerless, where do you put yourself where you don't have to experience the trauma in the moment, you know? And it's a defense mechanism, dream trauma, and I think it's well exemplified here just by looking at all the minutiae of the spider in the woodshed. This is it's a really strong write. It's just so dark that it's hard to really get into the details of it. Just an extreme violent trauma. Did you want to say anything, Pam?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Poetically, this is a strong write, a wonderful use of imagery. I like that she uses her poetic voice to talk about an important topic. Just indulge me a moment here, because I'm just going to go not into a tangent, but I am going to say something that's really important. Now, as someone who was sexually abused for about 10 years of her childhood and who's my uncle just recently passed away, I really appreciate that people write about stuff like this, and this isn't a rule, but it is my personal strong recommendation that if you choose to write about a topic such as sexual abuse, rape, that you label, you give that and in the title that there's a trigger warning so that people have a heads up. They have a choice if they want to listen in at that moment. They have a choice if they want to read the poem. And it's not that I'm taking away from the quality of her write or the importance of her write. It's that I personally feel, because of my own experience and because I know other people's experiences, that trigger warnings are extremely important. But with that being said, that the white spider imagery, yeah, that was fine, Sheila, and you're right. It did focus a lot on the whole disassociation. And I like, though, that she did take this from a different perspective, that she did take it from the perspective of the child who had to walk on eggshells. And it's such, you know, a horrible thing that children have to walk on eggshells. Nobody should have to, but especially a child. But anyways, excellent write and very well done. And thank you for the little extra time.
Yeah, no, of course. I'm in complete agreement. You know, I think the more difficult a topic is to write, the more important that it is written. But you have to be in a headspace where you're ready to hear it. I didn't experience this particular kind of abuse, but there are other rites that do correlate more closely with things that I have experienced that while I'm more able now to listen to them and feel like emotionally resonant with the piece, there was a time where that dissociation would click on at the beginning of reading because I just had to like shut my emotions off because I just wasn't in a place to process them. So,
Absolutely. Yep, so true. Now, just to let you know, we do now have all the audios in except Rebecca Robinson's was removed, so we don't have that one. So hers will have to be read. Like the audio was removed, not the poem itself.
Okay. Well, I think in that case, let's go ahead and grab that top one. Again, the first one. And I believe that was Lynn's piece. So let me plop that on the board again if you want to get it queued up.
And that was the one titled Eggshells, right?
Yes.
All right. Ready?
Yes.
Eggshells. For some reason, around your fortress, you've built insurmountable blockades, and from their safety, you thrive on lashing out, catapulting showers of fireballs and cannonballs. It took a while for me to realize we were at war. I simply didn't know. In hindsight, it's been going on for years, but I really, truly didn't know. I knew enough to keep my distance and stay out of the firing range. You've always had me walking on eggshells. Why? I haven't got a clue. After all these years, to tell the truth, somewhere along the way, I simply finally lost interest. So keep doing what you've got to do, and I'll continue liking you the way you are. The last of eggshell crumbs have turned to lovely sand, and your fireballs now look to me like nothing less than fireworks display.
Right. Well, thank you so much for the sound, Cloud Lynn. It's just so lovely to hear the piece in the author's voice. You read this with such a serene and pleasant tone that I really enjoyed. I really loved the originality of the perspective in this piece. It isn't so much about ending the relationship. It isn't so much about stepping away as almost regarding this person's one-sided war as silly, you know, and then say, like, basically, I love you anyway, you know, the fireballs in their eyes, which they mean to be like cannon fire or, you know, weaponry, just reads as a firework display. It's such an interesting and lovely thought to still love the person who is trying to abuse you. I'm not sure that I emotionally connect to that so much. But as someone, who has loved people who have been difficult to me, you know, even the relationships that I've called off due to abuse for various reasons, it's not that I didn't love them or even part of me still doesn't love them, and that's what makes that breakup so hard. But I feel like this piece is basically saying we're going to stick through it. I'm going to anyway. So I just thought, you know, the great mental fortitude of the narrator here to just ignore the eggshells altogether and grind them to a fine sand, you know, to make a beach out of eggshells was just such a beautiful imagery. So I thought this was a wonderful piece. What did you think, Pam?
I find, yeah, this is really interesting. Great choices with imagery. Catapulting showers of fireballs and cannonballs. And I find it, the part I find interesting is the fact that she wasn't aware at first that all this was going on. That's kind of intriguing to me because it kind of shows a disconnect on both sides, to where maybe they were just so both preoccupied with their lives, or maybe, I don't know, because I think I'm sometimes just a hypersensitive person and always constantly aware when I feel like people are, you know, angry at me. Although most of the time I do think that might be partially my imagination, but only partially because I know my attitude. But this is interesting how at first she doesn't realize it, and then all of a sudden she does realize it. She realizes she's standing in the middle of a firing range, and then the walking on eggshells starts. And I really liked that line and that last imagery. And I like that you brought the idea of building a lovely beach out of the eggshell. And I like that she chose to use the word crumbs, eggshell crumbs. I would have never thought of putting those together. You know, the thing that ending made me think of, and I don't know the exact reason why, but my mom was a huge gardener. She had rose bushes. She, you know, anything and everything you could grow in the ground up here in Wisconsin, she grew. And especially around the rose bushes, for some reason, they you crush up the eggshells, she raised chickens and geese, and she'd crush up the eggshells and mix it in with the planting soil. And I don't ever remember the exact reason why, but I know it's a common thing. So I kind of, to me, I got that image, that whole imagery, that idea of making, growing something beautiful, such as rose bushes, from the eggshells that have been crushed up. So I just thought this was a really excellent write.
That's a lovely image, Pam. Yeah, and the eggshells, it's a couple things. It's you're adding calcium back into the soil, but also you're adjusting the pH of the soil to be more basic. So if you're somewhere that has really acidic soil, you'll add eggshells because it has calcium carbonate to the base. Especially beautiful with hydrangeas because you can completely change the color of the blossoms depending on the pH of the soil.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can go anywhere from, white
cool
to deep, deep purple. Done
with
soil pH. Great comment. All right. Well, next one in here. So there we're going to go to Comic Poem by Mark Luppy.
All right. I have two by Mark, and which one, what is this one titled? Let's see, I have My Record and Love. All right, I gotta get, sorry, whenever I'm looking at the studio, I can't see whatever's going on in Late Night Poets, so that's why I always kind of end up,
back and forth.
Change.
The title?
Here we go. The sound cloud was called The Love That's Lost Inside of Us. So now I know which one it is.
Okay. All right.
There we go. And here we go.
I tell the poem, let's make a joke. I want you to be comic. I've been drinking in strange mood, sitting here in solitude. I'll finish you if I don't vomit. Just don't start sounding sad to me, because right now I don't want to be. Tonight I just don't want to see the love that's lost inside of me. I say, hey poem, let's comically summarize how it's been lately. All the friends have come and gone. No love affair is going on. Mostly, things make no sense to me. Please, poem, don't start sounding sad to me. Yet it does a little. How could that be? I'm thinking that it's possibly the love that's lost inside of me. I say, hey, poem, you do sound funny. Not funny, funny. Just funny, weird. With funny, weird, I won't make money. The payoff is in funny, funny. Though it's not as if I really cared. I guess this poem does sound sad to me. So why is that? How could that be? I'm thinking that it's possibly the love that's lost inside of me. This poem apparently disagrees. This poem apparently does care. It will tell me where to go. As for me, I don't know. So I'll just let it take me there. Yes, this poem sounds sad to me. Seems like that's what it wants to be. Why is that? How could that be? I'm thinking that it's possibly the love that's lost inside of me. End of poem.
Wow, I really enjoyed that, right? So I believe this poem was written for a Phasianas contest titled Don't Hide, which was written to the quote, I do not trust anyone who hides in the light and denies darkness exists, by Melody Lee. So just putting that out there so we have that in mind. I really loved the rhyme scheme on this. It gave it this really nice rhythm to follow as well. So the meter was really nice, and the rhyming scheme was really nice. And just how it moved from one place to the next, you know, to this first part where he's wanting to write a humorous piece, you know, that he's intoxicated and he doesn't even know if he's going to finish this poem, but he just wants, it almost seems like he's trying to cheer himself up. But as his conversation with his own piece of writing progresses, you know, it becomes evident that, you know, he is sad. He is depressed. That, you know, he wants so deeply to be in love, and it's just not happening. So no matter what, it's a sad piece. You know, and I love the narrative and the development of the story. It's a really well told story. And while, you know, in the poem it talks about it not being a comedy, the way that it's written as, you know, writing to inanimate piece of writing, you know, just makes it kind of darkly comic and also bittersweet. I almost feel like I'm there drinking with this guy and just feeling the pain of this narrative, you know, the wanting to be happy. And yet as you're writing, it's like, well, this is not happy. And just acknowledging that maybe this isn't as funny as I wanted it to be. But the rhyming and the meter and just the personification of the poem as a conversation partner almost does still make it, in my opinion, still somewhat comic. So I think it just works really well. And it's just a lovely piece. I feel like there was something else I wanted to say about it. Now I can't remember what that was. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the kind of melancholic humor to this piece and this kind of dreary confession. So great work. Mark, what did you think?
Yeah, I really like, well, first of all, I like that you wrote in kind of like a vignette style. And it does have, it's funny how it's a comic poem, and but it's such a dark, lonely, almost twisted humor. Like it's like the kind of book or that kind of movie that makes you laugh and cry at the same time, wow. And I like how it almost personifies the poem by talking to the poem. I say, hey, poem, let's comically summarize how it's been lately. All the friends I have come and gone. No love affairs going on. Mostly things make no sense to me. Please, poem, don't start sounding sad to me. And it's interesting how poems so often will take on a life of their own. This takes talent to balance humor and sadness at the same time. And this poem apparently disagrees. This poem apparently does care. It will tell me where to go. As for me, I don't know. And that's what poems do sometimes. They tell us where they are going to go. So just absolutely a clever write and very well done.
Yeah, I agree with that point of poems sometimes tell you what they're doing. Try as you might, you can't turn it back. You know, it's just sometimes they kind of write themselves into their own direction, whether that was your intent or not. You know, I can't speak to whether or not that happened in this case, but in my case, it happens a lot when I try to write a happy poem, ironically. I'm not very good at happy poetry because I use poetry mostly as an outlet for difficult emotions, and happiness isn't often a difficult emotion, you know? So I struggle sometimes to write more upbeat poetry in that respect. So it kind of reminds me of myself in that way. All right, so moving on, the next piece, Milk and Onyx by Rebecca Robinson, and that has a SoundCloud.
That was the one where the SoundCloud got taken out, so
that will
have to be read.
Okay. All good. I can give that one a read.
All right.
So Milk and Onyx to Robinson. Milk and Onyx, ink and pockets. Breathe, baby, breathe. Milk and Onyx, ink and pockets. Breathe, baby, breathe. Milk and Onyx, ink and pockets. Rich harmonies. How many times have we lost the knowledge, paying homage to some savage language? Every day is a journey, and I'm thirsty, searching for that mystery and energy that'll send me to a higher sea and body. From that prana to the skylight, I ain't quite got it right, quite right. But when I do, I'll ignite, because when you see, you shall find, got that 432, yeah, it's resonating minds. I'm drowning out my poltergeist, and every day I open blinds, but I'm peeking past the wise, so I turned around and rise. Water and that synergy, don't be drinking dirty, key to fleeing misery, and baby, you are worthy. So breathe, baby, breathe. Breathe, baby, breathe. Milk and onyx, ink and pockets, rich harmonics, breathe, baby, breathe. Breathe, baby, breathe. Breathe, just breathe. It's a process, burning up the nonsense in these bonfires of sense. Sometimes it feels immense to take some steps to severe habits like these cigarettes. Let's burn the matches and the madness, return these circumstances that have trapped us in sadness, reincarnating from the ashes while we're shifting our intentions. Got that 432, words, water, lessons. Yeah, invigorate the masses. Yes, 432. Is it resonating yet? Meditate on this frequency. I'm ringing it like sirens with these harmonies. Be pleasant while present. Healing lament, deeply resplendent. And all you've got to do is breathe, baby, breathe. Milk and onyx, ink and pockets. Breathe, baby, breathe. Milk and onyx, ink and pockets. Breathe, baby, breathe. Milk and onyx, ink and pockets, rich harmonics. Breathe, baby, breathe. Milk and onyx, ink and pockets, rich harmonics. Breathe, baby, breathe. Breathe, baby, breathe. Milk and onyx, ink and pockets, rich harmonics. Breathe, baby, breathe. Breathe, baby, breathe. Just breathe. End poem. Well, this is really rhythmic, you know. It's clearly meant to be read with a particular flow. It's very musical, and especially in the repetition of those three lines with the milk and onyx, you can almost hear a beat to it in the lyricism of this. So I really enjoyed it in that respect. I love, you know, how it's just about getting through it. The repetition of the milk and onyx, ink and pockets is almost like a mantra, you know, just hold on, you know, white and black, you know, dark and light, and just breathe it in and breathe it out. And just talking yourself through stuff and facing your battles head on, one by one. You know, I'm drowning out my poltergeist, and every day I open blinds. Singing over it, basically, like sticking your fingers in your ears and being like, la, 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 you know. Well, then, you know, opening the blinds and just shedding lights on it. And, of course, the acknowledgement at the end of that first stanza that's water and that synergy, don't be drinking dirty, is the key to fleeing misery, and baby, you are worthy. You have to be honest and open and like have that clarity, and know that you have value to get out of these rough situations and take on challenges head on. This isn't particularly about abuse. It's just about taking on problems. You know, it even mentions cigarettes and just changing yourself. So I really enjoyed it. I do see the repetition of the number 432, and I'm not quite sure what that's about. Maybe a reference to harmonics. I feel like that's just, you know, something that I personally don't know. But I really enjoyed the piece in general as just a way to just drive through whatever it is that you're trying to tackle. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, my goodness. I'm looking up 432, and I'm betting that it has something to do with music. There is the 432 hertz tuning, which is attuned vibrations. Now, this, I wish we could have, you did a wonderful, wonderful read of it. But I don't know, have you ever heard Rebecca make one of her SoundClouds?
I have not, no.
Oh, my goodness, that girl is so talented. She's in the rap group. She can rap. She can sing. There was this one time, and this is, like, she always is coming up with lines and phrases that just keep your attention. Like, she wrote for one of the shows back when Rima was hosting, and I can't remember what the exact topic was. I think it had to do with cartoons. They were running a contest with cartoons. And she wrote this rap where the repetitive phrase was, beat, beat, motherfucker. Beep, beep, motherfucker. We were going around for weeks after that going, meep, meep, motherfucker. I just got censored 3 times in a row. No, I'm just kidding. We don't have a censor.
No.
But she is.
The only
if
way
get
that'd be happening
to hear,
is you censoring yourself.
Right? Right? I know. I'd have to be the
just muting yourself.
But no,
over
she's
there.
Got some major talent, and I highly recommend if you get a chance, even just to wander over to her page and look at some of her raps and songs that have SoundClouds attached, to do that. This amazing flow and imagery. I do like the imagery of milk and onyx, ink and pockets, rich harmonics, breathe, baby, breathe. And I think breathe, baby, breathe is a really great repetitive line to have, because it reminds us that in times of panic and times of trauma, you sometimes just have to focus on the simple things, like just taking those deep breaths, centering yourself, and it does have a great lyrical quality to it, a really nice flow. And I really like the line, how many times have we lost the knowledge, paying homage to some savage language, each day is a journey and I'm thirsty. There really is a sense of in realization and empowerment within those lines. So excellent write and very well done.
Green. I have put the next one up on the board, Pam. So that's the next one by Mark, A Poem to be Read Aloud.
All right. Oh, here we go.
Well, looky here, Utopia. We built it like we should. Finally, it's arrived, the day when everything is good. People need a decent life. What's the alternative? There is no doubt, no if, in helping them to live. The robots now remove a lot of the pain and fear, and their well-oiled groove helpers now are near. Scanners in their station continually inspect all the aberrations, if necessary, reject. How did we do it? The one key to help the broken crowd was transparency. No shadows were allowed. Shadows breed corruption. Shadows build elites, imbalance and abruption. We had to kill the night. Now that the project's done, we'll maintain it come what may. And the suffering's gone. I'm hoping none will say. Our hearts have all died off in the open light. There's nothing thin of love, though all things are in sight. End of poem.
Wow, this was a really kind of bleak piece. It almost felt like sci-fi in a way. You know, it made me think of, Blade Runner, or like a Philip K. Dick kind of scenario. You know, the idea that we've built utopia, and there's such dry sarcasm in that first line. Well, looky here, utopia. Like, you know, it obviously begs that, no, this is not utopia. But just, you know, how everything is supposed to be good and how we have all of the things that we need and the machine is running smoothly. And then it hits on that problem, you know, right at the end. You know, our hearts have all died off in the open light. There's nothing seen of love, though all things are in sight. You know, and that's pretty bleak and dreary, you know, where the world operates as a well-oiled machine, but there are key positive emotions that are just completely gone and devoid for efficacy, basically. So I really enjoyed this and just that bleakness of it. I thought it was very well done. And of course, I enjoyed the dryness of his read as well. The kind of sardonic tone, I think, suited it beautifully. I do think there is just a tidbit of optimism in the title, Transparency, a poem to be read aloud whenever we finish fixing things. Okay, maybe never. I did read it aloud, but clearly we are not finished fixing things, you know, and the fact that it's acknowledged that, okay, maybe never, is a really good sign. That we aren't there, and hopefully we never get there, because love is, I think, as everyone willing to acknowledge, a very positive thing. So I really enjoyed this write, and I thought it was beautifully emotive in a dark, bleak, kind of sardonic way. You know, both of his pieces tonight have beautifully tied together, like that dry, sad kind of humor. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree. Mark is just spot on when it comes to that dry, sad, sardonic humor. And I swear to goodness, that first line, that would work so well as a line in a movie. That would be like one of those catchphrases nobody would ever forget. Well, looky here, utopia. I mean, that's just awesome. And I do like the title and the sense of the realization that utopia is never going to happen, and thank goodness, because when, you know, utopia does happen, it means because people are all thinking alike and all agreeing, and I do like how you mentioned this has a sci-fi vibe to it, especially with, like, scanners in their stations continually inspect all the aberrations, if necessary, reject. It's just such a horrifying thought to think that people would want a world where different is rejected, where, you know, everybody's a cookie cutter and a pawn and follows instructions to the T. And, you know, it just, it works so well. It has a very epic feel to it, even though it's not a particularly long poem. And just an excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, it is a beautifully dark piece. Yeah, it does. It reads longer than it is, if that makes sense. I feel like it's very compact. There's not extra verbiage floating around. So I think it's technically very well done in that respect. The next one on the board is called Among Us by Lynn Gauthier. If you don't mind firing that up.
I will be happy to do that. And here we go.
Among us. They walk among us, tall and proud, appearances deceiving. until they share what's on their mind, then things don't quite add up. Their babble, quite disturbing, plays havoc with our mind. It wouldn't be polite to say any one of our possible retorts. Best bite our tongue and not engage. It's not their game we want to play. So still, they walk among us, tall and proud.
Wow, this is a really well done brevity. And of course, I believe that is Gacy or someone similar, or it's just a clown, I'm not sure, in the image that she has attached to this. But it's a really powerful brevity, you know, about the deceitful and kind of messed up people that walk around in society, you know, just talking in lies and twisted, disturbing things. And yet there's no good response to it. You know, it wouldn't be polite to say any one of our possible retorts, best bite our tongue and not engage. But therein lies the problem. They can continue to confidently march around in society because they aren't being called out on the whack job mess that they are creating, that they're saying, they're speaking, that they are inflicting upon everyone else, because nobody is calling them out, largely in part due to self-preservation. You know, I think everybody's at least at one point walked across, you know, someone who's not quite right, that is making a scene, and you don't want to be the one to point it out, because then you're putting yourself on the line. But the only reason it continues to happen is because nobody is willing to put themselves on the line. You know, it takes that special kind of person to be brave and throw themselves out there. I'm first to admit I'm not always that person. You know, I have a sense of self-preservation. So it's interesting because it talks about the situation, and there's so many implications just in this really rather short piece, you know, that people aren't saying what should be said, and these people are out there, and the different, you know, as it implores my mind to explore the idea. And I love that kind of poetry because the idea is so complex that I can spend quite a amount of time just thinking my way through the layers of it. While it seems like something too short and brief on the surface, picking apart really, I think, lays wide, you know, some of the things that make society complex, especially when handling mental illness and potentially violent situations. So I really enjoyed this piece, that it takes me longer to think about than it does to read it. So excellent, right? What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree. It is a wonderful surprise when you read a short piece and you're like, you see the surface of it, and then you start, like you said, digging deeper, looking deeper, and you realize like how layered it is and how complex the subject is. And yeah, it isn't easy. I mean, like I used to live in Austin, Texas, and work at a grocery store in a neighborhood that, you know, wasn't particularly good. I mean, it wasn't one of the worst neighborhoods, but it wasn't particularly good. And we got all kinds of drunks and characters and people who just, you could tell they were very mentally unstable. And I had to learn to become one of those people who, when necessary, spoke up. You know, there was one guy who he kept being always a penny or two short, and so I'd let it go. And I cover it, and he did so often, the manager said, no, he can't do that anymore. So the next time he came in, I told him he couldn't do it. And he slammed his fist down on the counter and just really verbally abusive. And the moments like that when it's like, oh, shit, you know, it scares you. And So sometimes you want to bite your tongue, and other times, you know, you have to speak up, but it's not easy. And, you know, I like that this is only a couple of short stanzas, and it does focus. You know, I don't know if this is necessarily just about people who, like, with, you know, mental health issues, but I'm also thinking, what do they call that when somebody lies all the time, you know, and like makes up stories, you know, and
yeah, compulsive liars.
Yeah. It also kind of has that feel, which I guess that would be considered a mental or psychological disorder. I've never really thought about it, but, you know, it kind of has that feel of those people where you listen to the stories they tell everybody else and you can see the holes and you want to speak up, but because other people just love them so much, you know it's not going to do any good to speak up. You're going to be the bad guy. Excellent, right?
Yeah, and just thinking about how, like, other people love them. There's that, and then there's also the people whose stories are so ridiculous. I remember in high school there was this guy who told everybody at school that he found a diamond in his backyard that he dug up, but then he lost it because a panther showed up and took it. And he's telling this, like, deadpan. And it's the most outrageous BS line of story. Like, we don't live anywhere near where there'd be panthers, never mind gold mines that are, you're finding big old diamonds on the surface of your lawn.
Right, and just by coincidence, a panther walks by and wants that diamond.
Right, and takes the diamond. Doesn't maul you or anything, but just walks off with the shiny, I guess.
Right.
You know, and nobody called him out because what do you say? I mean, you know, to call him out, you're just going to create conflict. And you look around the room and everybody's making eye contact with each other. Like, everybody knows that this is not even close to the realm of possibility. Like, nobody's believing your story. You know? And so, in fact, you're just, like, letting this person make a total fool of themselves. You know, but they're
exactly.
Still sitting around puffed out like a rooster, like they think they've got you've lost, but no.
Well, I hope that guy ended up putting his imagination to good use and became like a published author or something.
No, he did not. No, I do know what he's doing. I don't want to call him out too much because I grew up in a pretty small town. So.
Oh, I get that.
You know, my goal is not to embarrass people, but, yeah, I know exactly what he's up to these days, but that's not it. So, but I don't think anyone will forget his wild, that's just one example. But he would just, I mean, and nobody really knew why he's making up this stuff. Like, there's no need for it. He would just, I don't know. So,
right.
It just made me think of that because it's like, yeah, nobody's calling him out because what do you even say? Hey, you're lying. Well, everybody here is aware of that, so. all right, I'm going to put up a Faziana's poem, Pam, if you don't mind giving that a read. And then after I think there's just mine, which I'm happy to read.
Okay.
But I think we'll still have a little bit of time after that if you want to find something while I'm reading mine, maybe?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, so I just put a Faziana's up if you don't mind giving that a read.
All right, this is Eggshells by a Faziana, and it goes like this. She was always on the ledge, and I feared being the reason that she took the final step. Voice spikes in pitch, hands tremor, cheeks flush, tears, shit. Any criticism spiraled into devastation. Slight correction made her feel useless. Questioning her made her feel inadequate. So I tread carefully in conversation, avoiding upsetting truths about myself, pretending home wasn't teetering, because one wrong word might be the Jenga piece that tumbles the tower. Don't remark on weight in any context. Test scores don't exist in her world. Never ask about her past. Don't question faith. Don't mention money. Never be openly ill. I tiptoe out of touch so as not to crush the eggshells with my bisexual, atheist, bulimic failure to meet expectations. But crunch. New shells littered my floor, a boyfriend with a traumatic past, different set of triggers to avoid. Never laugh too loud, don't touch in public, never wake him, avoid fireworks. Uniforms are not okay. These shells are not stepped off ledges. They are landmines. They might destroy me, too. Tick, tick, boom. I broke the egg. He broke me back. Now these eggshells I skirt around are my own topics. I know will strip my composure. Place where hyperventilation is inevitable. Conflict that will collapse comprehension. My therapist picks a few shells each session, asks how they are so fragile and teaches me to sweep them out of my way. The mess is gradually shrinking. Oops, sorry. The mess is shrinking gradually, little by little. End poem. Man, I can't believe my brain did that to me. It, like...
It happens.
That's always a sign of being tired for me is when words get mixed around and I actually visually saw it read as the way I first said it and then had to correct myself.
Oh,
I
good.
Apologize.
I still think you had a fabulous read, Pam. So I really enjoyed this piece because at the first third of it where they're talking about the first relationship with the woman who you can't say anything because they're so constantly on the edge of their own trauma and everything is such a trigger for them that, you know, there's no expression. You know, there's no communication. There's no talking about things. And I guess it's interesting from my perspective, my take on this, because I feel like sometimes for my husband, I'm that person. And I don't mean to be, you know, but certainly some things upset me. But I never want to give the impression that just because I'm upset doesn't mean we can't talk, you know, and there is the difference. Like, I may get triggered. Yes, I may get upset. I may have an inappropriate sometimes, frankly, response to things just because of what I've been through in my life. And so the way certain things, you know, mess me up. But I'll always come back to have the conversation. And in this case, it just sounds like that part didn't happen. It sounds like, you know, you're just not allowed to mention anything that's going to upset the other person. Well, that's not communication. You know, it's okay to be upset. Being upset is an acceptable emotion to have. You know, you don't have to be happy all the time or things aren't okay. You know, angry is okay. Sad is okay. Hurt is okay. They need to be expressed and then you need to talk about them. And then the second relationship where, you know, it's just a whole new set of things that this person isn't, you know, the narrator here is not allowed to talk about, which leads to then damage to the narrator. So now there are their own triggers on top of this to contend with. You know, now these bad relationships with such closed off and limited communications have caused trauma themselves that lead to similar situations. You know, I know it's a lot easier said than done, but just in relation to this piece, you know, me dealing with my own traumatic experiences and the way that I carry baggage from that, you know, self-awareness is such a huge thing. And it's so easy to say just, like, be more self-aware. Well, it doesn't really work like that. It takes, like, years of, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, either by yourself or with a therapist, to just be able to step back and analyze how you're feeling in a moment and just acknowledge it and then be okay with it and then circle back with the rational response. Like I said, a lot easier said than done, and I can say that. And I'm not perfect, obviously. Nobody is, but I think this touches some really great points about poor communication and the way that that can be detrimental in many ways to both parties. So I really liked this write. I thought it was a very strong write, and I felt like it was on a topic that, you know, really kind of needs touched on. So Great write, Ephesiana. So thank you for writing to it. What did you think, Pam?
Wow. Oh, my goodness. I really like how she takes us through having to, I assume the first person is a parental figure, probably her mother. And the second person, she talks about boyfriends and different friends. And then she talks about her own eggshells, the things she has to avoid. And, you know, the thing is it's a sad part of life that far too many people have been through trauma and then develop, what is that when you go through trauma that soldiers get,
PTSD.
Post-traumatic
stress disorder.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And that is a sad reality of life. And it's such so difficult. And oftentimes you can't find that balance because on one hand you don't want to be walking on eggshells constantly, but on the other hand you want to be respectful of the other person's triggers. I think it's, there's come that point where it was, you just have to walk away because, you have to take care of yourself. And I like in the end how she talks about how, her therapist is teaching her to sweep away the messes little by little. I also think that I really liked the bite and the snark, and I tiptoed out of town so as not to crush the eggshells with my bisexual, atheist, bulimic failure to meet expectations. I think so oftentimes parents, unfortunately, when their children don't become what they thought they were supposed to become, they're often the worst critics. I as mm-hmm. always, I'm impressed by the raw emotive honesty that's just beautiful and heartfelt in Ephesiana's poetry. So definitely an excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. It is beautifully done, yeah. And the cleanup, the aftermath. What I like about that line that you pointed out, in her description of her response, is she's now self-blaming, and it's exemplifies, the issue, to describe your own response as bulimic. How unfair that is to yourself, and yet that is the problem, is, the thinking has now changed to I am the problem. Excellent, right, Ephesiana. Great job. All right, I have put mine up on the board. It is called Footfalls, and it goes like this. I ran my childhood down long driveways of angular gravel, shod in calluses from years spent running. I nearly sheared off a toe at the age of 4, stepping on a beer bottle hidden beneath the moss, brown glass and soil commingling with blood. 5 stitches later, thick, white bands of scar tissue weld it back together. Flat feet with fallen arches paddle, ramshackle and seemingly blind, through shoulds and coulds, splintering paths behind me, so no one can follow, and I can't return. Why doesn't she whimper? Why doesn't she care? Why doesn't she peel the splinters from her soles, let them heal? The answer is tricky. Before calluses thickened to tough hide, baby softness tickled my toes. My feet never touched the ground, held aloft by love. Suddenly I was dropped in a broad field littered with eggshells and landmines, blood blotted with every footfall. Shells and shards tucked themselves in, skin blanketed the pieces. To pull them would mean cutting through the armor, and I still have miles to go, each stab a reminder of how far I've come. I won't walk around as some tender-hooved deer, tentative and nervous. Billy goat bullheadedness eats the thistles, blackberries, thorns and all. Belly satisfied only when there are no spikes left. When will I slough them off? Cut them out? When the forest is carpeted in moss and clover. Even then, I give it 50-50. I don't sprout hooves. End poem. So Pam, do you want to comment on it? I feel awkward commenting first.
Absolutely. Well, I kind of figured I would comment, and then you could tell me everything I was wrong about. No, I'm just, then you could, you know, offer up some, you know, thoughts on your own poem. But I really like how you immediately bring us into your childhood and how you just, you were one of those people who ran and you know, you weren't afraid and you it just, it very much reminds me of the, like when I used to live in the middle of the woods as a kid and we had a driveway. It was so, it was about probably a couple miles long. Like you could not stand at the end of the driveway and see the house. But it wasn't legally considered a road by the county, so it wouldn't get plowed. And I just remember trudging waist deep through snow and just kind of and bike riding. And that's what, when you brought up the gravel and you know, that gravel, man, that's some crazy shit to have to try to ride a bike on. And when you're the type of kid that likes to go fast, you will occasionally be flying over those handlebars. And I like that you put there's such strong imagery in here. Flat feet with fallen arches, paddle, ramshackle, and seemingly blind through shoulds and coulds. And what I like is that transfers so well metaphorically to a child's personality, to also but to an adult personality, because so many times in life, we are just pedaling and trying to get somewhere. And I like, why doesn't she whimper? Why doesn't she care? Why doesn't she peel the splinters from her soul with a heel? The answer is tricky. You know, people, you know, when they observe people who don't have necessarily strong emotional reactions, they wonder, you know, you know, and I like that you say the answer is tricky, because the answer to any sort of healing, to any sort of emotional communication, is not one size fits all. I really like, I won't walk around as some tender-hooked deer, tentative and nervous. Billy Goat Bullhead Miss eats the thistle, blackberries, thorns, and all. You know, I really like that. You bring up the Billy Goat's bullheadedness instead of being that, you know, delicate little deer. Now, are you a Capricorn? Or
I am not. Right now?
You are not.
I'm
okay.
Aquarius.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was trying to think of all the stubborn ones, like my sister's a Taurus or an Aries. And
yeah. My mom is an Aries. My sister is a Capricorn.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
Aquarius.
Okay, cool. But what clever imagery. And, you know, I'm, as I've said before, always a big fan of questions, because when we ask questions, it not only gives ourselves a chance to open up and heal, but it gives people, the reader, the opportunity to think. When will I saw them off, cut them out? When the forest is carpeted in moss and clover, even then I give it 50-50, I don't sprout hooves. And the interesting part about this imagery, it also, like, makes me think about, and I actually just found this out, because I've never actually been around a lot of horses, especially after they've given birth, but apparently I've learned this, that the hooves of the newborn, you know, colts or, you know, baby horses are covered with, like, it's like basically like soft material that comes off within the first few hours after they're born. And it's on there because when they're inside kicking the mother to make sure the mother doesn't get, you know, hurt or killed from the internal bleeding, that nature actually provided that. And that's very much kind of almost like, it reminds me of a sense of somebody who isn't to that point of healing that they're willing to let go of that protective cover. I just think this is a wonderful, thought-provoking write. You are certainly very talented, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about your poem.
Thank you, Pam. You know, it's funny that you bring up the really long driveway, because I also had about a 2-mile long driveway. and it went very steeply up a hill. Yeah, and they did not maintain it. We had to maintain it, so we had to gravel it. And we bought, like, that white, super sharp, pointy gravel, you know, that eventually turns to powder, but when you first get it, it's just all angles. I mean, literally, my feet were so calloused, I could just run on it. You know, so I didn't wear shoes much as a kid because I grew up out in the woods too. I tumbled more than once over handlebars onto that. It's a great way to have permanently brown knees into adulthood.
Right. I totally get that. Yeah, I honestly didn't start wearing shoes on a regular basis until I was an adult. You know, even when I was in my, you know, basically when I had to go out and meet people, I wore shoes. Other than that, I was barefoot. Actually, I'm barefoot right now. Yeah. I'm just...
Same. You know? I'm also barefoot. I also don't wear shoes all the time. You know, I'll go outside barefoot. My husband's like, why don't you have shoes on? I'm like, I don't know. It just didn't occur to me to put shoes on.
Like, right. Especially if it's not cold. I mean, you know, if it's cold, I think of it. Or particularly hot, you know. But,
yeah,
you know,
but to just run outside real quick, I'll just get the mail without shoes. It's not, you know, it just doesn't occur to me. Or even at work, I have to switch between my regular shoes and my work boots frequently. And I'll just walk around without shoes on for a minute while I'm in the middle of the transition. You know, if I get distracted by something and people look at me like I'm crazy for like being barefoot at work. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe this is a little weird, but... I didn't really wear shoes regularly for a long time. So I think we have that similarly, you know, in respect to each other. I don't think you really got anything wrong so much, you know, as it is, you know, I never tiptoed around the problems. I mean, I will say that, you know, at least in regards to dealing with conflict in my life, you know, there's been some pros to heading things head on, but then there's also the issue of shoveling back the emotions on it, you know, and waiting. You know, you build this dam so that you can get through, but at some point you have to open the sluices and let all that water out, you know, all the emotionality. And so I tend to be fine until I'm suddenly not fine, which has its own set of problems. Defense mechanisms are interesting things, you know.
Yeah, that is very true. That is very true. Yeah, good points there. I know when I was still married, we were going to a marriage counselor who had gave this idea or had this thing where what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to say, like, I need to take some time and, like, go for a walk or step away, and we'll talk about this later. And we tried it. But what would happen is my husband at the time had the kind of personality where he was really quick to jump on the bandwagon with the, I don't want to talk about this right now, we'll talk about it later, but never wanted to talk about it later. And I had that personality that as soon as I realized that he was never going to talk about it later, I would follow him and keep talking because it was like, it was just kind of that whole idea of, you're not going to talk about it later, so I'm just going to follow you and keep talking about it. And so it really just became this vicious cycle. But I will say, though, that I think it is actually a really good idea. The problem is that you need both people on the same page. And, you know, when you say you're going to talk about it later, you have to talk about it later. And when the person says they can't talk about it in that moment, you have to be able to, you know, let go. But,
that's actually something that my husband and I are currently working through, is that exact issue, you know, because I'm the, I need a minute, you know, because I get overwhelmed and then I'm not able to rationally discuss things. So it's just, I need a minute away, but he's the type who will follow me. And I'm like, this isn't going to go well because I haven't processed. And so all you're going to get from me is like, just emotion with no rationality behind it, which isn't going to help them.
Oh, exactly.
You know, so
so
we're working on me giving him a time. So when I say like, I need time, you know, and then giving him like, a, you know, check in with me in 15 minutes, kind of a thing. So that I have processing time, but he doesn't feel like he's waiting forever. Now, typically we are pretty good at coming back around to it if given the opportunity, but the problem is the opportunity doesn't happen because I get followed.
That's
learning
true.
How to argue. It's a thing.
It is definitely an art form, and it's, you know, definitely does not always come easy, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So that brings us to the end of our little list. I didn't know if you had one that you wanted to throw up there real quick.
Yes. In fact, I'll just go ahead and push send because I already had it in the little box. And I think this one kind of fits the topic. This is scattered clothes, and it goes like this. Clothes are scattered about the room, stepping stones to your disapproval. I'm holding my breath, waiting for you to baptize me with the way your eyes try to touch the ceiling. Every time I want to spend the day in my favorite shirt, the tie-dyed baggy one that hides all the splinters in my suit. Sometimes I want to go to the beach, then I remember I hate sand scraping between my toes and the way seagulls brag about shitting on everything. So I stay home and leave the clutter on the table just to feel I can draw air into my lungs without washing your purgatory down my throat. End poem.
Great piece, Pam. Thank you for the read. I connected to this one in a lot of ways that I could kind of tangentially reference, you know, just endlessly via rabbit holes here, but just the idea that just that feeling of just waiting to get yelled at, you know, just waiting for the eye roll, waiting for the sigh, waiting for the belittlement because some decision that was made just wasn't, quote unquote, the right one. I love the idea of the baggy tie-dyed shirt hiding all the splinters in my soup, you know, like the problems, all the flaws in the relationship just happening, you know, especially since people who are depressed tend to dress, you know, poorly, you know, ill-fitting, ugly, you know, just because they aren't caring about themselves in that moment. You know, they're caring about something else or maybe not caring at all, depending on their emotional state. Sometimes I want to go to the beach, you know, and then remembering all the things that you don't like about the beach, you know, just that the pessimism overriding the desire just speaks really strong to me of depression. I also really like the seagulls bragging about shitting on everything because I can just picture that so well, you know, the cocky seagull. It makes me think of that quote about, you know, arguing with the toddler is like playing chess with a pigeon. You know, they're just going to shit all over the board and still strut around like they won, you know.
Yeah, I like that one.
You know, just that last one, just the staying home and not doing anything, just because dealing with the conflicting emotions of this anxiety and just the inability to deal with the scenario is just less rendered emotionless. I relate to this really strongly. This is actually how anxiety affects me in a lot of ways, which sometimes it's hard to describe, but I think it's really well described here, Pam. So I really like this piece. Is there anything that you wanted to say?
Yeah, I really like, and you're right. There is a certain way that you dress, like that favorite tie-dye baggy shirt. I did have that for years. I somehow lost it. And I'll be honest, I like tie-dye. It's festive, you know. And so I probably still have the shirt, but you know, it just. And to me, this was all, a lot of it was not only dealing with the depression, as you mentioned, and the anxiety, but the depression, the anxiety that, like, when, and sorry if I'm talking too much about my past, but, mm-hmm. you know, when I used to be married, and he would get very angry about if he came home to any sort of a mess, and you know, like, if with, you know, I was, there were times obviously taking care of a special needs child plus three others and, you know, having health issues that I wasn't always able to clean. And one of the things that I learned was that because he would come into the kitchen and the first thing he would see would be the dining room table, if that was clean, it gave me that little extra, like, time to have a breath before the disapproval started. And you know, mm-hmm. so, but, and then basically, so I, with this poem, it was kind of focused, and this was written, obviously, like, after, well, not obviously, but it was written after my divorce, like, years after, and it kind of, to me, focused on the whole idea of how I had to learn that it's okay to leave some messes. Like, it really honestly took me a very long time after my divorce. And then I'm not encouraging people to be slobs, but, it was like I was constantly, for a long time afterwards, in this panic state of having to clean every night to the point of physical and emotional exhaustion while being a single parent. And I realized, just it took time, but I realized that I could, when necessary to take care of myself, leave the clutter on the table. Nobody was yelling at me except for myself at that point. But I really like that you noticed it picked up on the baggy dressing, the covering up the flaws, the perceived flaws, and, the anxiety of the pessimism of, not wanting to go out, but realizing that, this might not go good. And so, thank you so much for the comment. I really appreciate it. And great show tonight.
Yeah. And thank you for being here and talking with me. So just a heads up for anybody who's listening or listening later. The upcoming contest for next week is about Lao Tzu and Taoism. So I've put up some quotes there, especially focused on tidbits from the Tao Te Ching. So I encourage everybody to go take a look and see what inspires them. Did you have any upcoming shows or contests that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, on Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, Rex is running a contest for Father's Day. So there's a lot of different songs that have to do with fathers. Then he has a contest running for his After Midnight show, Fear and Loathing Going Gonzo After Midnight, although I will say there's only one entry left in the contest, and it's probably going to close soon, but of course rights are still welcome. Once he, has the topic board up. And I have a contest running for next week's Into the Darkness with Dark and Creepy Tales, where we're asking for, like, dark, creepy stories that you might hear in the 1920s, 30s, 40s radio show. And, of course, we are asking for people to make recordings. Another one I'd like to mention, this isn't one of mine, but I know right now Richard Wiseman has a contest running for quotes from The Serpent, Rainbows, and Hurston. And I noticed right now he's only got four entries, so really great, inspiring quotes. So people, if you get a chance, go ahead and check that one out.
Yeah, there are some really good quotes in there, for sure. So that's one I've been thinking about doing on for a minute here. But, yeah, get out there and write. All right. Well, thank you, Pam, for your wonderful help tonight. It's so much appreciated. And thank you to all of the fabulous writers who gave us permission to read their pieces, and so many people who provided SoundClouds. Always appreciated. Love to hear your poetry in your voice. And to Frank and people who hung out on the board with us. Have a good night, everyone. Thank you for joining.
Good night.
Night.